I would like to caution listeners that the upcoming interview touches upon various topics that some may find upsetting. In an effort to tell the real story of what's now happening in Myanmar, we encourage our guests to share as they feel comfortable doing, affirming that this platform is one that could bear the weight of their story. As traumatic as the events have obviously been for our guest, they can affect even those of us listening from a distance as well. I'll be honest, every member of our team has shed a tear at some point or another in the process of bringing these interviews to you. And similarly, you might find yourself affected by this story. If you feel that some of this content may be upsetting in what follows, maybe consider listening in stages or whatever works for you. But please listen. Please bear witness to what this guest has to say. Shakil, thank you for joining us on this episode of Inside Myanmar Podcast.
Yes.
So we're going to talk about your background as a reporter, as well as your experience growing up in Yangon and Muslim community, and what you've been doing since the revolution. So it's wonderful to have you on here and share your journey. And I would invite you to first begin by talking a bit, before we get to present day, talking a bit about where you grew up and how some of those early experiences started to shape your later career decisions.
Yeah. Firstly, I would like to introduce myself. I'm Shakil. I'm a photojournalist and ethics and also a researcher. Firstly, I'm based in Yangon before the coup. Do you want to know my childhood life?
Sure. Yeah. You can. Yeah. We could. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. I was born in Yangon, but I raised up in a small town called Daye. It is a little bit far from not. I think 8 hours away from Yangon. Yeah. And then I moved to Yangon. I was born in 1984, and then I moved to Yangon permanently in 1998. And then I grew up in a Muslim community. My first hobby is drawing, and just drawing. I try many times to draw. To learn drawing, but my elder, my auntie and my, some of my relative, they don't allow me to drawing. It is prohibited by their religious view.
Really?
So really? I have no chance to drawing, but I will very little crazy about this, but I give up my hobby, my first childhood hobby, mm-hmm. in younger age, like 3 to 4 years. Yeah. And then when I moved to Yangon, they didn't allow me to go outside. So I spend my time all the time in my home. But I have no siblings, so and My childhood is very, I think, very boring. I have no other friend like children friends. I spend all the time alone in my home. So I think I just relax when I feel freely when I go to school. In the school, there are so many children like me. So I love going to school. But in the school, I was discriminated. I faced so many discrimination because I'm a Muslim descendant. They call me Kala. Kala is very discriminate to Muslim in Myanmar. They always they bully me a lot. Some of my Buddhist friends, but some they help me. At the same time, some Buddhist friend help me. At the same time, most of my Buddhist friends bully me in the school. So I have not much of friends in my school life. So I spend most of my time in reading and listen to music.
What kind of books or what kind of music did you like to listen to?
Firstly, I'm luckily in 90s. There are a few journals in Myanmar, like especially Sport Journal. Sport Journal, at the time, I remember in R and De Gaulle. Yeah, something like that. My father buy it. He was a footballer. He always buy this kind of journal and some magazines. It is just an entertainment magazine, not for the children. In my Danish life, I reading many kind of book. At the time, there is some are novels, some are magazine. I read a magazine, journal. It is my preview of my childhood.
Right. So thank you for giving us that background of growing up. You know, it sounds like you were in somewhat of a strict religious Muslim home on one hand, but then when you would go to school, you would receive discrimination from being a Muslim in the school. And it sounds like your escape from both of those extremes was through literature and music. That was your outlet. That was your what developed into a passion. And so as you were a reader and a listener into these types of things, what made you want to actually go into these professions and produce them on the other side?
Yeah. In 2004, I have a chance to work for translator position in Sport Journal. I think the Evo Media produce many journal in Yangon, and one of their editor is my friend, so he invited me to work with him. I already told you I spend most of my time in reading, so my writing in Burmese is very well. He invited me to help him in editing. At the time, I'm very interested how to translate English to Myanmar. So I accept. I grab this opportunity. So in 2004, I worked for. It was my first paid job in my life. Mm. It is in 2004. Mm. I worked nearly 1 year. But I resigned it because there was discrimination. Oh, I see. I faced discrimination.
How did you experience discrimination?
Yeah, it is my long life trauma. Actually, school is my freedom place, but I think I can go outside at my home. So school is my school time is my pleasure time. It should be, but in the school I face discrimination, and then my big job, first time ever, I face discrimination. A discrimination everywhere for me in Myanmar as a minority Muslim. It is firstly, they asked me, why did you eat the bowl? I replied, I'm a Muslim. They say, why? Do you worship the bowl? The pig? Do you worship the pig? It's a very shitty question for that age. Yeah, it is, I think this nonsense in our 20s, 30s, but they are asking shitty questions like this. Do you worship the pig? It's shit. They don't, they said, he is a kala. He is kala. Unfortunately, I was only one Muslim in their office at the time. It's very difficult for me. I'm just the only one Muslim in this office. So, actually, they didn't like me. I think cause I was favored by editor, because he is my friend, and then at the same time I'm very well in Burmese writing, so he is very favor me. So others staff, actually some body staff, didn't like this situation. Yeah. So after the 1 year, I resigned. I left the job, and then in nearly 5 or 6 years, I have no job. I just reading, and I work for some volunteering work for others. In I think 2010, I have a chance to attend the journalist class in run by Egress, run a mass communication class. It is the class for journalists, actually for journalists, but they didn't advertise as it is a journalist class. They just call mass communication class. So I try, and then I start, and then after the class, I got a chance to join the Voice Journal as a for internship for my internship. I just 2 months spent the time in the Voice Journal. I start face discrimination again. At the time, there is some Rohingya. Some people don't like Rohingya and Muslim in their office. So I left my job again. So at the time, I decided myself I will never apply a permanent job for Burmese organization or journalist media. I will stand as a freelance. So I decided in 2012 April there was a anti-Muslim riot was erupt in Saigon and Gamma. Saigon is a near Park Gamma is a very little bit far from Bie. Yeah. So some of my friends report this news to me. So I write this news and publish on Myanmar Muslim Media. So I stuck work with Myanmar Muslim Media with my friend. Some are living Singapore, some are in Yangon. So in 2012 to 2021, I spent my I work as a media freelance media journalist and researcher and advocate for many organizations in Myanmar. In 2020, I decided I just want to be a photographer. In my childhood life, I'm very crazy about drawing, but in this time, I'm just trying to draw again, but I can find myself. But in this time, I love drawing, but I didn't know how to draw. I'm very bad in drawing in that time. So, but I love picture. I love camera. So I want to create the image. I can drawing, but I can just clip. Yeah. So in 2020. I decided myself, it is my long time dream. I want to be a photographer, especially a documentary photographer. So I left all the job and I started out a full-time photographer. Unfortunately, in 2020, there was a COVID outbreak all over the world. So I have no job. I face many difficulties. But I'm just still patient on my decisions. I didn't want to go back to I don't want to go back from my decision. So I'm just waiting to get an opportunity for me. In 2021, in February, there's a coup in Myanmar. Since the coup in 2021 in Myanmar, I start my freelance photographer life in Reuters and AFP. Some of my work were published on Reuters and AFP at the time. So in 2021, at the end of March, I think on 29 March in 2021, I was arrested by SEC. Because in my way to take document the body of the protester, they found me, my camera. So they arrest me and they beat me heavily. My right eyes didn't see well in this time because they hit me heavily in torturing room. In their interrogations, they hit me heavily. Firstly, they know my ID. Oh, you are Muslim. They hit me more because you are Muslim. There's many discrimination, endless discriminations I face in Myanmar. So, fortunately, one of my relatives, who know well, they are generous. So he helped me to release soon. When I was released after arrest, after just 3 days of arrest in their police station, I was released. At that time, I helped in 2021 during the coup. I helped some of my friends. I managed for safe house some of my friends, including one of the member of CRPH. So SAC, and finally in 2021 end of August, SAC know I support safe house for Eddie Vicks and some politicians, so they are trying to arrest me again. So I moved to Lake Eko in 2021 September, first week of September. And then in 2000 I live in Lake Eko with my family. In 2021 December, SAC dropped the bomb to Lake Eko village. So my family moved to Methot. At that time, I was in KNU Brigade 7, so I can go back to Lake Eko. So finally, I decided to move. I also moved to Methot to join with my family. So I moved to Lake Eko in 2022 March.
I understand you also went to the front line as a photojournalist. Is that correct?
Yeah, sure.
Yeah. Where did you go? How often and when and what were the experiences?
In 2021, in September, I did actually. I am and I'm prepared to go to the jungle, but I have no choice, so I moved to Lake Eko. In 2021 September, I have a chance to cover the PDF group in Lake Eko. They are just trying their, at the time, the PDF group is just trying to set up. They have no guns. At the time, there are nearly 100 people in the troop, but just they have 6 guns. but they are trying to get a more developing at the time. So I have a chance to cover this news. The what was published in Reuters as a photo essay, Myanmar Youth, entitled as Myanmar Youth in Jungle. Yeah, it is my work published on Reuters. In frontline experience is many different in our life. I have never ever seen this before. Actually, I was born and raised in town. But in the jungle life is very difficult and very different. But we are very difficult in we are very difficult to get a food, good food, and there's no hygiene, and there's there is a poor medical system, very poor, no hygiene, and we just eat what we have. It is not a good nutritious for all. And there is no electricity, and there is no internet at the time. But in this time, they can use easily. They can get easily internet access using Starlink. In 2021, there is no Starlink in Myanmar side. Yeah. But there's a good advantage. In 2021, when I live in Yangon, I can well sleep all night during the coup. Since the coup, I can sleep well since the coup in Yangon. But when I moved to Legego, I sleep well.
Really?
Because it is a liberated area. There is no military soldier. Totally controlled by KNU. So I sleep well. I love that. The experience is, I will never forget it. At the time when I moved to Lake Eko, there is a fresh air. I never hear this name before, Lake Eko. So many Burmese now live in Mesol. They had most of them had some experience about Lake Eko. They love Lake Eko. We all love Lake Eko. Yeah, actually, during the coup, in since the coup in Yangon, we all lose our dignities, and we always feel insecure. Someone who lives in Yangon under control of military rule, when he firstly arrived Lake Eko, he feel freely. He can taste what the freedom is. So we love this place.
Mm.
Yeah. Mm.
Did when you were in this area and you were being a photojournalist, did you see any conflict?
Yes. Not only seeing, I was arrested 2 times in the conflict. Firstly, in 2000, I didn't remember the exact date, but it might be end of 2000. It might be 2013. And there was a anti-Muslim riot was happen erupt in Paketa, Yangon. Some Buddhist mob are trying to demolish the temporary mosques. Not mosques. In madrasa, Muslim Islamic school madrasa. They are trying to demolish the madrasa. So I cover this news. So I was arrested by extremists in 2012 or 2000 13, maybe 12 or 13. Mm-hmm. I didn't know exact. I didn't remember, but the exact date. So, but some few hour later, I was released. But they are trying to they are heavily flame to me. They are so many. They ask me so many questions. Why you record this situation? They don't want to show they are criminal. So so I just flaming with my mobile device. Mm-hmm. But they didn't but I have some I got some few clip. It was released on YouTube. Do you know the Mavada? Mavada, anti extremist, anti nationalist, anti Muslim and nationalist right wing group mm-hmm. in Myanmar.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. In 2017, they are trying in South Dagon, they are trying at the time they are trying to demolish the madrasa. So I am trying to cover this news. They arrest me again. At that time, I spent nearly 4 hours at police station. I was arrested temporarily. I was detained temporarily, nearly 4 hours. Yeah, cause to flaming their activities.
Mm, great. So you talk about this history of discrimination when you were after the coup, when you found yourself in liberated areas with resistance fighters, those protesting the military. Did you feel discrimination even during those moments as well after the coup, or did things change?
In 2022, there was a discrimination and still happening in I would like to say it generally in 2021 SIC declared the coup. We all are united. We were united. So many Buddhists apologized there to Rohingya at the time in 2021, cause they want to grab our media attention or international attention. So they apologize, and we all are saying, we apologize. Now we know our sins. But in recent day, in 2024 and in this year 2025, now they are trick the Rohingya. They are discrimination the Rohingya. So it's not. I think it is that there is a little bit change, but it is not enough.
So you didn't feel that those apologies were genuine. You felt they were more superficial to get attention. Is that right?
Yeah, sure.
Right. And how about you personally? Have you experienced discrimination on the side of the resistance?
No. I feel generally a little bit less discrimination for minorities. Yeah.
Mm.
But there are so many discrimination in many sector. I hope we will get more good time in the future.
Mm. But you feel that even though some of those apologies may have been superficial, it sounds like you do feel that the overall discrimination has decreased. Is that correct?
A little bit
A little bit.
Yeah.
Right. So a little bit, does that mean that you have still felt some discrimination on the resistance side?
Some places I faced.
Right. Some places you faced and other places.
Places that they are welcome, more welcome. Any other days. In my experience, most of resistant fighter and generals, most of the resistant general, they didn't discriminate me. Mm. But there is a discrimination in some, but I faced.
Mm.
Yeah.
So when you were on the front lines, were you ever in a conflict situation of battle when you were in Brigade 7?
Actually, in Brigade 7, there is no fight. There's no battle when I live in Brigade 7. But in Karini, I went to Karini last year. There's many battle. Actually, I am a witness of two airstrikes in Karani.
And you were there as a photojournalist?
Yeah. In 2024 September, I work for one media organization. At the time, I cover two airstrikes in Karini. One is a refugee IDP camp. One is a Karini office. One of the Karini office. I would like to mention but I don't want to focus on the office attack. I want to focus on IDP attack. There are I think about nine or 10 people were killed at that attack, including children. One of the mother lose her head. Yeah, I covered this news. I will never forget it.
You witnessed this.
Yeah, I'm witness and I covered the news.
You probably had never seen anything like that before.
No. No. Never, never, ever.
What kind of impact did that have on you?
I can't... I gotta sleep at night for long days. I can... it is very difficult to erase my memory. Mother was beheaded during the airstrike.
And the children saw that?
Her children also died.
All the children died?
All the children died.
So you saw...
One family, there is three children die with their parents.
And you saw that?
Yeah, I saw that.
How do you decide whether it's appropriate to take a picture?
Yeah, it is... it is not a good experience to... it is not a good event to cover the photo or video, but I decided I need to report. People or other international other people of around the world should know this news. Yeah. Car is very important. SAC is they are targeted to civilians very crucial way. So it is it is very bad experience for me. So I cover the new with sorrow. Yeah.
So you did take a picture of the corpses. It reminds me of this story. I heard an interview many years ago with an American photojournalist who was in Iraq, and there was an incident in Iraq. I might be getting the details wrong because it was so long ago. I believe it was Fallujah, where some American contractors were killed, and then their bodies were dragged through the street, and then they hung their bodies up, what was left of their bodies. So there were just fragments of their corpses and their bodies that were hanging, and I believe this is the story. I might have some of my facts wrong because it was so long ago, but what I remember is that there was an interview on Fresh Air, and as the reporter was being interviewed, he was describing his decision about whether or not to take the picture of the corpses. And he did take the picture because he felt that this was, and it was a famous, gruesome picture of these American bodies that were hanging in the street, what was left of them. And he took it because he felt that it was very important for this information to get out as to what happened, even though this was, you know, such terrible torture and dismemberment that happened and so gruesome. But he said that he felt that the decision to take those photos did something to connect his soul to those who had died by act of taking the picture and sharing the picture. He felt that it was a path of no return, that he had joined somehow with the souls of those that had died and connected with them. And he had to carry that burden with him, going forward for years. That was some kind of supernatural connection that was made, and that I believe he even kind of tried to communicate with those that died, apologizing and trying to explain his intentions and what he was trying to do. It was so traumatic, this decision of whether or not to photograph these bodies in that state that they were in. So I'm also wondering, you know, from your side, if you felt what kind of connection you felt with those bodies you were taking the picture of.
Yeah. When I was taking this kind of, I'm a little bit familiar to taking the dead bodies of protester during the early days of the coup in Myanmar, especially on March, there were many protesters were shot and killed by SAC in Yangon. And firstly, I cover some of their dead body, and I create it as a photo essay and published in on Burma Civil War Museums. At the time, I decided I will flame. I will flame all what I see for history and information. So I always apologize their soul.
Really?
Really. But I will at the same time, I always promised their soul. I took this photo for together to share information and let me try for your dignity and for justice, especially for justice. In one time, we should. I would like to. I have a dream. One day, all Burmese people are seeking their justice in Burmese people. I hope that one day Burmese people should sue the military on the court for their justice. So I hope that some of my photo were support this situation for this legal case. So I always apologize their soul, and I always promise their soul it is just for information and just for record, and I will help. I hope that your body or your event will support to legal process.
That's a big burden to carry.
Yeah.
You say that you would apologize to their, you would apologize and then promise to their souls. Yeah. What was that act like? Was it something that you thought? Was it something you said? Was it a prayer? Did you feel a connection? How would you have that communication?
Just my feeling and a promise in my mind. I believe, actually, literally, I'm still alive. They are dead. It is just literally. So I can, I don't want to speak loudly. So I always speak in my mind as a praying, like a praying. Yeah.
It's like a prayer. Did you, when you would say that prayer, did you sometimes feel some connection?
Yeah, sure. Sometimes I feel sometimes I feel strange.
Really?
Yeah.
How so?
Sure. Just I don't know how to call just
goosebumps.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. You're gesturing on your arm like goosebumps. So. Yeah, yeah. So you get goosebumps with that. So, so in Kareni, you saw airstrikes that killed children and mothers and parents and killed them gruesomely, dismembered them and had their body parts strewn around. And you had never seen something that horrific before. However, after the 2021 protests, when the first crackdown started, you did see and photograph dead bodies of students and protesters that were shot and killed, not dismembered, but shot and killed. And so you did have this experience before of seeing young people who were very alive and who were murdered murdered in cold blood and in broad daylight by this brutal military. So you did have experience with that. So going then back to that 2021 experience, when you encountered those youths that were killed in such a terrible manner, and you were there witnessing it and photographing it, I imagine maybe that was one of your first experiences to be around something like that. So what was that like for you? What was it like for you to encounter the dead bodies and of the youths who were protesting, who were innocent? Because I imagine you hadn't had that experience before.
In 2021 experience, and one of my first time experience is about who came on that, who was a campaign manager of Sidhumaun. Sidhumaun is a noun. He served as a spokesperson of CRPH. Mm-hmm. He was a Do you know Sidhumaun? Sidhumaun is Burmese Muslim politicians. At the time in 2020 election, Sidhumaun ran as a MP from Chaudhara. So at the time, Mr. Kemal Lad, he was also a campaign manager of Sidhumaun. In March, SAC member arrest who came on that, and then they asked where Sidhumaun is hiding. Actually, he didn't know. So the soldier hit him to death. So I cover this event for the first time.
How did you cover it? You mean after he was killed?
After he was killed.
Yeah.
Yeah. I cover his I've covered the new his dead body. At the time he got he was heavily hit his head with maybe a stick, but some of his skull was damaged, heavily damaged.
Was that hard?
Yeah.
Was that hard?
Yeah, he was hurt by a soldier. Soldier hurt his head many times with stick, so he died. Within an hour, he was arrested. This is my first time. Firstly, I'm very sorry because he was my friend.
Oh, I'm sorry.
He was my good friend.
Yeah.
He helped me a lot during the for to support some information.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's really tough.
Yeah.
Hmm. It must be hard to talk about that now.
Yeah.
We can move on if.
Yeah.
Yeah. So from then you did cover the students and the activists.
Do you know Banya? I think his name is maybe Banya Ken. Banya Ken. Yeah, he was a young student. He is attending the medical university. He is a good medical student. Medical student. Yeah, he will be a doctor soon. Yeah. Now, he is a first-year medical student, Banya Ken. He was a medical student. I think he attended first-year medical student. He was shot and dead in I didn't remember the exact date, but during the early days of coup.
And you covered that?
Yeah, I covered that because he was my neighbor.
Oh, God.
He's just, I think, 70, 16 or 17.
Oh.
Very young.
It's awful. I'm sorry. It must be hard to talk about this.
Yeah.
Is this trauma that still stays with you?
Sure. In 2000, when I reached to Thailand, I struggled with, I'm struggling with anxiety. Especially anxiety and depression, yeah, for a long time.
Yeah.
In 2022 and 23, I was heavily contact with Rohingya. At the time, there is no Burmese media organization. They recognize the Rohingya. They always refer their name as Bengali. Yeah. So editor of Myanmar Muslim Media, I always stand up for Rohingya and other Myanmar Muslim. So many Rohingya contact to me and to share their story. So I receive many phone calls from Rohingya, and I'm hearing many stories about their bad experience. So it was for a long year. I start get anxiety and depressions. So I'm still struggling with anxiety and depression. Yeah, I'm still struggling.
What work are you doing recently?
Now I'm working as a documentary photographer, and now I get enough money from my photography, so I work as a fixer for foreign medias, and freelance photojournalist and I'm working as a multimedia journalist based in Minnesota, and also working as a fixer and a freelance researcher for some times.
Mm. You mentioned that you went to Kareni last year where you saw the airstrikes. Do you frequently or do you occasionally go into Myanmar now?
Sure. I want to go back to Myanmar side for my work, especially in current state.
Hmm. What's that experience like, crossing the border and going into Karen and covering the conflict?
Yeah, for me, it is, it is more, but in this time, border crossing is a little bit crazy. Sometimes I have always worry about this case. It is illegal way, I know. So if I want arrest, it might be a big problem. Mm-hmm. So I just a little bit worry about the border crossing, but in covering the news in the jungle is. I think it is a little bit used to be for me more. So there's, I don't want to be exaggerate. There is no specific difficulty when I was covering the news in current state.
Yeah. Yeah. Is it a strange experience to be in Mesot, which is a relatively peaceful, safe, small town, and then you travel just a small amount away, and suddenly you're in a conflict zone in the middle of a war? Is that a strange experience?
Yeah, strange. Mesot is a little bit crazy for Burmese migrant workers. I have a visa of for migrant worker visa, like we all call it a pink card. Now I have a visa of a blue collar job visa, so I can work with my real work like a journalist or fixings and research. So but as a illegal person, I have no choice.
And is it a strange experience to be here away from conflict, and then you travel a little bit and then you're in conflict?
I'm happy to hear to stay in Mesot, cause it is very near from Myanmar side, and there are many Myanmar community in Mesot. You don't need to speak Thai or English in Mesot. You can communicate with other Burmese colleges in Mesot. If you can speak Burmese, you can get enough for your work. I think there are big Burmese community in Mesot, but in the other hand, there's a bad things in Mesot is Thai police targeted to Burmese guy, as they see Burmese as their money machine.
Yeah. You've met many resistance fighters now, yeah. And you've met them. You've been beside them. You photographed them. For those of our listeners that have never met individuals of the resistance to the Myanmar military, how would you describe the feeling of being by them? How would you characterize them?
The resistance fighter, they are brave. They sacrifice not only their life but also their family and soul. They sacrifice all for us. especially for all Myanmar people. I can't compare their sacrifice with other things. They sacrifice themselves for all, not for their own interest. So they are real hero for me.
And it seems, I mean, this is an interesting contrast because you began the conversation by talking about the discrimination that you faced in not being a part of Burmese society. And now at the end of the conversation, you're talking about this ultimate sacrifice that's being made for all the people of Myanmar, presumably including yourself.
In this time, firstly, before the, I think before the coup, they hate most Rohingya and Muslim than military. In this time, they hate more. They hate military more Muslim community, I think.
Do you think that this could be some progress towards inclusion, or do you have hopes for a post military Myanmar?
Yeah, I think discrimination. I think there will be a discrimination after the military, but we need to take time. But I have but I hope we can change their mindset after military. After we win.
So it sounds like there's you feel that there's some positive signs, but there's still a lot more work to be done. Is that correct?
Yeah. Good. I see positive. When we win the revolution, we can change many things. I hope, and I believe that.
Well, thank you for taking the time to talk and to share with us. And
yeah, thanks for inviting me and sharing my experience. Actually, I faced many discrimination in Myanmar. It is not only me with my other minorities. They suffer like me. But in this Burmese revolution, in Spring Revolution, all minorities sacrifice their life for the country. So I hope after the revolution, we will get a same opportunities, and we will get a new environment with there is no discrimination environment. We will get, I hope that. Yeah.
I hope you enjoyed today's interview. Longtime listeners occasionally ask me how we're able to feature such a diverse array of guests, including some who rarely speak in the kind of depth that they do on this platform. The answer? Patience. Because we're not a conventional media outlet, we don't demand that our guests conform to our deadlines. Instead, we adjust to them. This means that some of the guests you've heard took us months, and in some cases even years, until they really felt ready to come on and share their stories. For us, the comfort level and safety is an essential pillar of our platform. But this commitment also means that it can take quite a bit of sustained work on our end to produce the results that will eventually stream so effortlessly into your earbuds. While this is no easy task, it's one that we are deeply committed to. But we can't keep it up without your support. So if you've benefited from the wide range of interviews we've been able to offer and think this may be something of a net good to the world, please consider making a contribution to help us along, as we'd like to be here for the long haul. InsightMyanmar.org/donation has all the information you need to learn about our donation options.
Oba yarananda dayananga na yarananya dayarananga podaba yarananga no dadu